So we are doing an interview with myself, Wedi Okorafe. The date is the 22nd of April 2017. We are recording in All Hallows Church in Southwark, London. And the individual being interviewed is Neil Fletcher. And the project is the Greater London Council Story.
Okay, here we go.
So, Neil. Just checking it's recording. Would you like to tell me a little bit about your background and preceding your involvement with the Inner London Education Authority? And, what was going on at What was going on just before you got involved with the authority? Where were you at?
Well, I won't go through my entire life story, you'll be pleased to know, but I came from the north of England, born in Blackpool, lived in Bolton, lived in Leicester, and then came to start university course in London in the early 1960s, moved out and finished off the work and studies that I was doing in Leeds. But I came down to London, where I've stayed ever since, without any movement at all, in 1970. I'd done teaching in schools and in colleges, and I got a job working in colleges in a college in London, and I taught in London boroughs of Harrow and Merton, North London as well as South London, but never part of the inner London boroughs at all. I nearly did. Interesting to think what might have happened if I had gone and got a job working in one of the inner London boroughs or one of the colleges in inner London. I would have been disqualified from becoming an elected member of the Inner London Education Authority. But I didn't. So I got on to Camden Council in 1978, was elected for the first time, and within a year I was representing the Borough Council on ILEA, which was a surprise, wasn't anything I'd planned. It was a vacancy, I went for it and got it. And that's when it all started, really. So 1979 until 1990, 11 years, I was a member. Initially just representing the borough of Camden and seeing that their interests were represented. In 1981, I was already good friends and colleague and political ally of Ken Livingstone, and Ken became leader of the GLC. I was on the ILEA, but once Ken became leader, we had a big shake-up, new members came on, it became much more left-wing. I was one of those supporters of Ken's, and at that meeting in 1981, the first meeting following Ken's election as leader of the GLC, I got a job working for ILEA, and I was chair of the Further and Higher Education Committee, which in size terms made it a rather smaller, less significant committee than the schools committee. But having said that, I mean, there were 1,200 schools, so if you were chair of the schools committee, you looked after 1,200 schools. But as chair of the Further and Higher Education Committee, it was my patch, it was my area of interest. So becoming chair of that committee, which I did for, well, until 1987, so I did it for 6 years, in some ways the best years of my life, because it meant looking after, funding, managing, overseeing an enormous area of London's interest in education. For example, there were 5 polytechnics, they're now universities. So we were running, and I chaired the committee that ran 5 universities. I can't imagine today anybody running 5 universities. If you're chair of governors or chair of the committee of a university, that's a big job. I had 5. I had 2 teacher training colleges as well. And that's just for starters, because we had, I think, 35 further education colleges spread across the 12, 13 boroughs. When I say 12 or 13 boroughs, there were 12 inner London boroughs plus the City and Corporation of London, which is very small but significant, and perhaps I can come back to that. They were important in funding. But nevertheless, across those 12, 13 boroughs, there were 35 colleges. There was also the Adult Education Service that came on my watch, as was the Career Service, and various other things too. So it was an enormous area of responsibility, always regarded as less important than the schools, but I taught in schools. Okay, schools are important, but to me, the further and higher education remit was just superb. I couldn't really believe it. I don't know, that gets me as far as talking about how I got involved, and that's my first job on the IEA. I can talk a bit more about that, or we can go on till later when I became the leader of it during the last few years before it's abolished. But yeah, I've got us on to the question of why, you know, ILEA was so successful. My area was F&HE, that's the shorthand for it, and it was a great job.
Would you also be able to speak a little bit about the political situation as well around that time?
I can talk about the political situation in London. I can talk about it nationally as well. And in the end, the national politics prevailed, which is, in a sense, down the road a little bit from where we are at the moment. But certainly we were abolished because of the political aspirations and ambitions of Margaret Thatcher. But in terms of the politics of the GLC and the ILEA when I became involved, it had always been, and I think was always likely to have been, run by the Labour Party. Simply the composition. It still survives today. London is very much a Labour-focused city. And in those days, it was even more so, I think, than perhaps today. But nevertheless, all of the boroughs, with two or three exceptions, were run and dominated, or controlled, should I say, by the Labour Party. There were Labour councils. Westminster wasn't, Kensington and Chelsea wasn't, and Wandsworth wasn't. Those were three Tory controlled, but all the other ones, seven of them, the City and Corporation of London always made a big fuss about not being run by one party and another, but as far as I was concerned, it was a very wealthy city, and by and large they tended to take the Tory line, but they were not conservative. It wasn't a conservative council. I enjoyed the politics of working with colleagues from all the other inner London boroughs. It was good to know that we had lots of money. We were the most well-funded local authority, the most well-funded local education authority anywhere in the country. And I think I've not the statistics in front of me to prove it, but it was said to me at one time that the ILEA was the best-funded local authority in Europe. We got a very large amount of money, which of course we thought was well justified because we were spending it on the poorest community in the United Kingdom. London still is a very poor city. It's also wealthy and affluent in some parts, but there are many parts of London you can go to and you can see real poverty, real desperation, and the education service is absolutely crucial if we're going to help people to get out of their poverty and become more prosperous and get jobs and qualifications and so on. So that was the sort of the political scenario that I became involved with. But I'd been a teacher, I'd been a lecturer, I was aware of social class, I'd joined the Labour Party years beforehand. I'd got a previous political interest in Trotskyist movements, but that was behind me. I joined the Labour Party, I think, in 1985. And started to work to win Labour control and to implement Labour Party policy, which I still do. I'm still a Labour Party member.
And would you be able to talk a little bit more about your, I suppose, your personal politics and your relationship with politics?
Well, I don't inherit anything from my family. My father worked in local government and he never said a political word in my hearing at all. So I didn't inherit a Labour Party culture or tradition. But I had good friends when I was at school. We talked politics. We talked about the need for change. We believed in, I suppose, revolutionary politics. We thought it was perhaps possible to transform British society by taking control of it, turning it over, taking power away from the wealthy, the affluent, and handing it over to ordinary people. It wasn't quite to be, but nevertheless, there was a campaign, a battle to be fought which is why politics was always attractive to me. I believed we were doing something that was going to serve the interests of the large number of people, large families, living in cities like London, struggling to make a living, needing help, needing support, and needing to get the exams passed and the qualifications obtained that would get them good jobs and allow them to earn a decent living and hopefully get involved within the local party, their local parties, and campaign for it as well. So that was, in a sense, my background. I developed friends through the Labour Party in London. I'd had friends in political circles up in the north of England in Leeds, where I'd been living just before coming to London. But yes, to me, there were big issues, big challenges, and we're going back to the 1980s, and we're talking about a time when Labour was in opposition. When I first went on to Camden Council in 1978, there was a Labour government. It had 1 year to go. And it was starting to be difficult, perhaps, for the Labour Party to fund the projects, fund the services, the health service, local government services, education, that it would have liked to have done. There had been various national crises, which we're quite familiar with in these days. But that was the last year of the Labour government, and in 1979, when I'd been on Camden Council for 1 year only, there was a general election and Margaret Thatcher was elected, and I think that change transformed the landscape, and politics have been different ever since.
Talking about politicians, if we move to the politicians, small politicians and ILEA and the GLC, would you be able to talk about the relationship between ILEA and the GLC?
Yes, I think we, in terms of our overall policies, I think we were of the same mind. We believed that it was necessary to transform society. I think it's fair to say that in terms of the policies that the Labour Party pursues these days, we were already doing it. I always used to think when we went up to Sheffield or Birmingham or other parts of the country for national conferences, we were regarded as being progressive. For example, we had a commitment to equal opportunities, we had a commitment to women's rights, we wanted to see women in jobs. I remember my commitment was really to do the same thing in my area, in the further and higher field. I think I appointed probably between 10 and 12 principals of further education colleges that were women. I'm proud of that. They were the best candidates, obviously, but they were perhaps more frequently overlooked in other areas and parts of the country. ILEA had that real commitment. We also appointed people from ethnic minorities into senior positions. I enjoyed that. It seemed to me this is what London is all about. Why I still live in London, because I enjoy that culture, that community spirit. And I think London is out on its own sometimes. But yeah, we were doing that in those days. And I enjoyed very much the opportunity to work in terms of pushing the barriers and making sure that we were trying to identify the community groups that were under pressure, that were not succeeding well. We used to look very carefully on the ILEA at the relative success stories in terms of exam passes of kids with different social backgrounds. It wasn't true to say that all the, if you like, the black community kids did badly and the white kids did well. That actually wasn't the way it was at all. There were some of the ethnic minority communities who did particularly well, succeeded better than the white working class communities. So you had kids from India, you had kids from China, you had kids from Sri Lanka who did really well, and they performed at the top of the, if you like, the league table in terms of performance, you know, at O levels and A levels, or GCSEs as they're now called. Significantly different, not nine, but the same sort of examinations, and the number of kids who went off to university when they were 18 or 19. Actually, the largest proportion of kids who were successful at all of those three levels tended to come from those, if you like, more successful communities in London. You then got some of the white communities, some of the white European communities who did pretty well. at the bottom of the league table were perhaps Bangladeshi kids, some kids from Pakistan, tended to find it difficult, perhaps because they were the most recent arrivals in London and their families were perhaps struggling a wee bit more than some of the African communities, as well as the ones I've mentioned. But what we did have was a situation where at the very bottom of the league table, the charts, were the white working class kids. Sadly, that still is the case today, and I think statistically, if you can, I can't quote you them here, but if you look at the success stories of kids, I think the test is free school meals, but if you then look at the kids who are on free school meals, i.e. from poor families, and you look at the white working class kids, or the white kids amongst that group, then you'll find they do particularly badly at those classic examinations, the tests that are set, the Ofsted equivalent tests, and also the GCSE and A-level exams, which is a pity, but it means there's something still to campaign for, to improve, to spend money. The government we've got at the moment doesn't want to spend money, but in fact what we should be doing is spending even more money educating those communities.
GLC's interest in ILEA as well?
GLC didn't have any involvement in education at all. The education service in London actually goes back to 1870, and the London School Board, which was established, I think, in 1890, was responsible initially for setting up and founding schools in inner London for kids from poor backgrounds. And the London School Board then became the London County Council in, I think, 1905. And it was the London County Council that carried on for the rest of the century running the education, obviously mostly schools, more and more schools, but there was a legal requirement to provide an education for all London kids. There hadn't been before 1870, but after 1870, it became the law of the land that a proper education kids, certainly up until the age of 11, and then a bit later, 13, 14, 15, and now, of course, it's gone up to 18. But those were commitments that were carried out in London by the London County Council. The London County Council was eventually abolished, but immediately replaced by the GLC. Struggling to be precise about what year it was, but it was in the 1970s. That happened. And you then had 12 or 13 inner London boroughs which ran all the services other than education. They ran housing, social services. The GLC ran the big issues like transport. They did some housing, they did fire service, the police service and so on. But they didn't run the education service because it was still had been run by the London School Board. And it was felt that the outer London boroughs were running education, but all the 12, I keep saying 12 or 13, inner London boroughs all did their own, sorry, didn't do education. It was done for them by the London School Board and then by ILEA. So it's a significant little bit of history that the borough councils, they do now run education in their own boroughs, but that's only in the last, since 1990. Before then, they had no involvement at all in running the schools.
Okay, so it's mostly a lot of this is obviously around the GLC and kind of getting as much, basically whatever your perspective is on GLC and like the GLC as an institution, people that were involved, and what you were aware of, and who you were aware of as well. So, should we start with, the practical side of, so the ILEA and the GLC, as in like the way it was administered?
Yeah. Well, actually, legally, the ILEA was a special committee of the GLC. That said, it was a simple technical, almost a legal description. The GLC had no powers over education at all. all the members of the GLC who were elected across London, but those who came from inner London constituencies were on the ILEA automatically. So if you came from Camden or Southwark or Westminster, on the GLC, you were also on the ILEA. That was a matter of fact from the start of the ILEA and remained so right until the end. In addition to those, I think there were probably about 40, maybe 40 and or go on for 50, members of the GLC who served on ILEA from the inner London constituencies. Each of the 13 London boroughs nominated one person each to serve on the ILEA, so that there was a link between the borough councils and ILEA and working closely with the GLC members. I was initially fortunate to be the Camden Council. I lived in Camden. I was already on Camden Council. I was a councillor already, and I was able to be the Camden representative on ILEA from 79. And I stayed on as the Camden member until 1986, which of the year is the year that the GLC was abolished. The government had a problem. What was he going to do about ILEA? They'd abolished the GLC, or they were abolishing the GLC. Clearly they were planning what to do. But the argument was that the ILEA was too important, too powerful, too significant, and spent so much money that it was best to leave it in place, but to set it up as its own so separate local authority. So technically, rather than being a subcommittee of the GLC, in technical terms, we became, from 1986 until 1990, that four-year term, we became a separate local authority. I think, and again, I would need to check the books on this, I think we were the biggest local authority in the United Kingdom in terms of the number of people. We employed over 120,000 people. We had a very large number of schools to look after, and colleges as well, and polytechnics too. So there was an awful lot to do. Our budget was about £500 million, which in those days, and that's in those days, I'm not talking about at present prices, £500 million, phenomenal amount of money. And it really was a privilege to be able to spend it, to look after the schools and the colleges and the polytechnics, be responsible for the public funding of them all.
What were the kinds of things that you were using the money for? Could you speak a bit more about that?
Well, schools tend to run themselves. We used to have divisions, so all the schools were in a division according to, not necessarily the borough boundaries that we have today, but the same kind of areas. We had about, I think we had 10 divisions, and the schools in those divisions were kind of looked after at a local level by officers who were located in their own division. Schools and colleges and polytechnics and the youth and the adult education and the youth service were not really divided up and managed in a borough-based way. We ran them from County Hall. We had teams of officers. We had teams of inspectors. Their job was to go out and inspect the colleges and the polytechnics and give help and support, and if necessary, to become involved in sorting out problems which occasionally arose in any organisation. So that was the sort of relationship that we had. If we go back to the when I started 1979, I think that the politics were extreme, as I hinted at earlier, was very extremely left-wing by those standards. Not to say we were doing things that were irresponsible. Many of the things that we were doing, many of the plans that we had these days would be regarded as very normal, very simple, very straightforward, matter of fact. But in those days, some of them I talked about, working with ethnic minority communities, spending extra money on providing help and support for families that were struggling, and actually providing far more teachers per school so that kids were in smaller classes than anywhere else in the country. One of the enormous things I'm proud of was how successful we were, as one of the members, taking any personal credit for it. We were proud that we did spend so much on our schools and employed, I think, some of the best teachers in the country. And the kids benefited from it. And when it was all abolished,
I think it was real setting the clock back. And unfortunately, the kids that suffered from that, many of them, I suspect, are still suffering today because they didn't benefit from the kind of largesse, the wealth, the spending power, and the political power that the Inner London Education Authority had.
And in terms of, was it a specific question, is there anything that you wish that you'd done differently at the time?
Well, that's a big question. I don't think there were any significant problems that I think I got wrong. There may have been this or that decision. We were responsible for handing out large amounts of awards. We gave lots of grants to kids to go off to university, and adults as well, where it wasn't actually the law of the land that we as a local authority could give adults grants to go off to universities and get qualifications. But we did. We called them discretionary grants, discretionary awards, and that was very important. In terms of things that we got wrong, I guess we may have made the odd mistake and given somebody a grant or an award who shouldn't have. I think there were some examples that some people used to pretend they lived in Inner London so that they could apply for a discretionary grant, but then, hey, it was doing something that was probably wrong, but for a good reason. As far as some of the reorganisations were concerned, there may be things that we could have done differently. I don't know whether you want me to talk about it, but one of the big reviews that I conducted when I became the chair of the Further and Higher Education Committee in 1981, and as I said, carried on for 6 years doing that, I said I wanted to review all the way that the further education colleges and the polytechnics were organised. I wasn't sure that we were doing it in the right way, that they were, for example, were they overlapping with different subjects that overlapping doing the same subjects that could be done differently, and there were concerns that perhaps we needed to look again at some of the art and design colleges, which some people were saying we had too many in Inner London. And that actually, out of what we did, we had a review. I set it up, I chaired it, and I think perhaps in some ways some of the more significant things that I did was chairing that review of the further education colleges and the polytechnics. But we created something which is now the University of the Arts. I chaired the review that brought together 7 different art colleges, and that was phenomenal. There's a lot of opposition. Each of the colleges resisted being merged. They didn't want to be merged. Chelsea didn't want to be merged with Central. St Martin's didn't want to be merged, and so on. There was a London College of Fashion. There was a London College of Communications. That's using today's term. The College of the Distributive Trades, there was a meat college, and it was a real struggle getting them to merge. I mean, we had the power, we could do it, we did it. Did they want it to happen? No. Were they wrong? Yes. Was I right? Yes. And the merged colleges that became something called the London Institute from 1987 onwards, and I chaired the governing body of the London Institute when it came into existence. In due course, it became became the University of the Arts, which is what it is now. And I think it's a very successful London-based university, and I take great pride. I'm still slightly involved with it. I go to things. I have no job or responsibilities at all. I'm not on the governing body. But yes, that was one of the achievements that the ILEA did that nobody else could have done. These days, if you want to merge 2 colleges, it's God's own job. I mean, the resistance is enormous. So the idea that we merged 7, we then added another couple on later, and brought them together, they squealed, they didn't want it to happen, and we said, but we're going to do it. And we did. And I think the success, if you go to the University of the Arts, you talk to people who are students there, talk to people who work there, talk to the Vice Chancellor there, I think they all think it was a great step forward, and I take a lot of pleasure from that and take a little bit of pride.
Okay, so I'd like to ask you about just to get get some, I don't know, to speak a little bit more about your awareness of GLC and its workings and events and their policies and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Just get sort of your perspective on those things.
Well, as I say, I wasn't a member of the GLC, but many of the people on my committee and on the ILEA were. I said there was a possibility that you could be a borough member on ILEA. But nevertheless, we shared County Hall. We used the same offices. We talked to each other. We went to the canteens together. We went to meetings. I served on various GLC committees. And of course, the GLC members who were from inner London boroughs were on ILEA as well. So we were one big, I'll say, happy family. I think there was a good degree of commonality, understanding between even the different political parties. We weren't fighting each other. It was recognised that the GLC from 81 onwards was controlled by Ken Livingstone, controlled by a very determined, very, use the jargon of the press, a very left-wing council. I was proud to be involved with it. I think it was the most progressive local authority in the country, and the ILEA shared exactly in that position. And I don't think there's ever been, and probably never will be, a progressive authority to begin to compare with the GLC in those days and the ILEA at the same time. If you want me to say why it was, I think we did challenge some of the assumptions that local government nationally made, that governments made, about the right and power of, you know, provincial or middle class people, presumably in the most cases white men, from running services. We actually stood that on its head, and it was, I think, the GLC and the ILEA equally both shared the commitment to London people. If you're voted for as a councillor by a mixed multiracial community, you've got to serve their interests. You've got to look after them, all of them, all groups. I've got to serve the interests of the white rich people. Yeah, of course I want to make sure they do and get everything they can out of education. But I've also got to make sure that the struggling groups within society are looked after, are protected, are assisted, educated, trained, helped to get into university. And I think we did that. I think the success, somebody once said to me that if you took all the kids who'd been through ILEA schools and ILEA colleges and were at university, they could fill Stamford Bridge football ground at any one time, you know. And people sometimes used to say, oh, it's a waste of public money, it's too rich, it's too extravagant, it spends too much money. But what we were doing was filling a football ground with Londoners who were getting university degrees and going on to get good jobs. Or jobs. I hope they were good jobs. I hope they did well. At least they had a chance. And I think it was that positive discrimination, standing out against racists and standing and working with Tories. There were Tories I liked and got on with and shared some of our aspirations and ambitions. But they wouldn't have done it if they'd have been in power. It was because we were in power and we had the backing of the communities, we had the backing of the London Labour parties, and they shared everything that we did. So it wasn't a battle. The battle was with central government. And in the end, central government won. We were abolished.
And speaking about the abolished, so GLC and its abolishment, obviously ILEA went on for quite a few years afterwards.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you speak a little bit about that time when the GLC was abolished?
Well, it was very, very difficult, very, very painful. We were, I think, certainly all the elected Labour councillors of the GLC and the ILEA were horrified and appalled that in spite of the campaign, Ken Livingstone led a great campaign to save the GLC, but he failed in the end. I don't believe that there was a sensible reason for abolishing the GLC other than simple political stupid prejudice on the part of Margaret Thatcher and her friends. I don't apologise for saying that. I think it's a matter of simple facts. If you look at what happened after the GLC was abolished, in the end, 20 years later or so, of course, they reinvented the London Assembly. And of course, the London Assembly was, in its earlier form, the GLC. if it made sense then to create London Assembly, which of course Ken Livingstone went on and he became the Mayor of London. But he'd been the leader of the GLC some 10, 15 years before. And, you know, there were people who said, well, haven't we been here before? But nevertheless, that was what had happened. Personal spite on behalf of Margaret Thatcher and her cabinet abolished the GLC. It was difficult for the ILEA to carry on because we were losing our people. We were losing lots of staff who served both authorities, because we did have people who were had expertise in buildings, in salaries, in recruitment, and all those, you know, office areas. We had the educational experts. The GLC didn't have the educational experts, but nevertheless, we were of the same cloth. We were working together with the GLC when they were around, and when they were being abolished, I think it was clear they were going to be abolished from about 1984 onwards. So there was 2 years when they were preparing for the end. We knew we were going to be going on a different elected basis, but nevertheless, the ILEA was going to continue. It was very painful. It was a setback in terms of much of our aspirations. It would have been much better to have had a GLC alongside us, because we did work well together. But that ended. There was a time when questions were asked about whether we would be able to stay in County Hall, which of course is a splendid building. The Tories, in due course, when we'd been abolished in 1990, it was sold off as a hotel. But it was paid for by the ratepayers of London. County Hall was built by you and Mark, you know, our money, and our predecessors. It was a London-funded project, built on the South Bank. Splendid building. What it is now is a hotel making money for rich people, and that stinks as far as I'm concerned. But we were nevertheless doing the best to see that the ILEA would continue, keep the traditions going. I think we did a good job. And when the GLC had been abolished, we, you know, got stuck in. And it became a matter for all the councillors, mostly Labour, but of course there were some Conservatives as well on the Inner London Education Authority. And our job was to keep the tradition going, keep the spirit going, keep the policies alive, and make sure, if we could, that we kept the traditions of the GLC going in the educational field. I think we did a good job at that, but eventually, of course, Margaret Thatcher decided we had to go as well.
Can you tell us why the ILEA had to go after the GLC?
Well, Margaret Thatcher had, who'd been Prime Minister since 1979, we're now talking about 1986, we carried on. We were elected. I was elected from 1986 on. All the other councillors were elected by parliamentary constituencies. So I was elected by Holborn and St Pancras electors. So it was the same parliamentary constituency as Frank Dobson, who was the MP for that constituency in Parliament. And we carried on. We fought hard, but nevertheless, I think it was clear that Margaret Thatcher was under pressure from some of her Tory friends to abolish us. I think for no good reason. I think it was for spite, and because we spent a lot of money, and they thought we were spending money on working class people and middle class people, but we were not spending it on the rich. Of course, people in Kensington and Chelsea, most of the people who've got kids in Chelsea, in Kensington and Chelsea, send their kids to private schools. They're paying their rates to County Hall, but actually they were paying for their own education, the education of their own kids themselves. Same is true of Westminster, and same is true to some extent in Wandsworth, same in other boroughs as well, but it was those ones that had got the biggest number and the biggest size of the population that were paying for an education service that they didn't use. So Margaret Thatcher initially, there was an election in 1987, general election. And during the general election campaign, Margaret Thatcher said, or her manifesto, said what they would do was allow boroughs to opt out. In other words, the ILEA will continue, but if any of those 13 local authorities decide to opt out and become their own education authorities, she would elect them. That was in the Queen's speech in 1987 when the Tories won the general election again. Interestingly though, once the bill was published, mid-1987, which was going to reform the education service, it was clear that some of Margaret Thatcher's backbenchers wanted her to go for abolition. We fought and we campaigned against it. We didn't want to lose Wandsworth and Westminster and Kensington and Chelsea at all. We didn't want to lose them at all. We didn't want them to have the right to opt out. But at least if they had have done, the rest of the inner London boroughs, Labour-controlled boroughs, would have continued and would have run the education service. But once Margaret Thatcher was ganged up on, there were two prominent Conservative members of Parliament who were responsible. One was called Michael Heseltine, and the other one was called Norman Tebbit. They're still around, they still crop up on television from time to time, different political persuasions within the Tory party, but they signed an amendment which moved to add to the Queen's speech, or add to the Education Reform Act, that the government should go for outright abolition. I mean, that really was the final straw and marked the beginning of the end. I became leader in 1987. I replaced Margaret. God, I've forgotten her name. Frances Morrell, do apologise. I replaced Frances Morrell as leader. She was not popular. It was clear that she was losing support within the Labour councillors. We used to call it the Labour group. The Labour group didn't like Margaret, and I was elected to replace her as leader. So for 3 years, I led it, but unfortunately for two of those 3 years, it was very clear that we were going to be abolished. And indeed, the last year was one of the most miserable years of my life, because basically I was simply preparing to hand over the education service to the London boroughs. They, of course, while saying on the one hand they thought it was outrageous that ILLI were being abolished, privately they were licking their lips and thinking, wouldn't it be good to get our hands on all that money and get our hands on the education service and run the schools in our own boroughs. They'd never had run schools in their own boroughs before, but they thought it was very exciting and a great opportunity. Oh, I guess I can understand that. I don't sympathise with them. But nevertheless, once it was down to the fact that we were going to be abolished come 1988, the Education Reform Act that Kenneth Baker was responsible for bringing through the House of Commons, eventually the House of Commons and the House of Lords, in spite of all that we'd done to campaign as hard as we could, we were abolished in the House of Commons, and that meant effectively we had 2 years left to go. 2 years were due to abolish, and we were abolished on the 31st of March in 1990, at which point ILLI came to an end, my political career came to an end, it was all over, and the boroughs took over. A very sad moment, not making a personal point, but I think very sad for London's education service, which had been around, had been together, had been united since 1870.
That's right. So 4 years after the GLC's last.
Yeah.
Basically, they closed.
Finished.
Yeah. I suppose I'm curious about the similarities of that time. So you've had 2 years to prepare to end. What was that preparation? How did you prepare?
Well, I think the heart had gone out of a lot of the elected members. They knew that what their job was to stay around, not to plan to improve the education service over the next 5 or 10 years, which of course politicians like doing. Yes, there's this week, there's this year, there's the opportunities to try to get things done. But the big things, the big issues, whether it's housing, whether it's transport, are the projects that run ahead over 5 and 10 years into the future. And that's why politicians, I think, often misrepresented and misunderstood breed, but nevertheless they have to do those things and take the long view. to be around in London and to be involved with running the education service over the next 5 years or 10 years, start to think about the schools, think about the colleges, thinking about the way that you should be training your teachers, the way that you should be helping kids to qualify and go into sixth forms or go into further education colleges and then go on to university or colleges and get qualifications that will get them jobs. All of that is the big picture. And what happened in 1988, once the Education Reform Act had been passed, was that that became, it disappeared off the screen. We no longer could start to think beyond March 1990. And that meant we just focused on, I suppose, doing what we could. I think we did a good job. I think none of us liked it. I certainly didn't like it. Going to meetings with the leaders of those 12 London boroughs and telling them what I thought they should be doing in order to get ready to take on what I said was over 100,000 employees. If an average borough had perhaps 70, 80, even more schools, that was a big job. You'd never run a school before. You take on 90 at one go, at one sitting, big problems. So all I could do was try to help our staff, our inspectors and our officers to work with all of the boroughs so that they could be almost trained, inducted in what they would do to manage the schools and the everything from managing them, appointing them, checking their credentials, seeing that they're being managed properly, being sure that you're in touch with the head teachers and you're conscious that the head teachers need inspectors to go in and help them run their school and help them. And also you're wanting to make sure that you've got systems in place to pay wages, to check qualifications, to run the schools, to employ the grounds people, the grounds persons, to employ the school caretakers and so on and so forth. All of that, brand new job, taking it on. And 2 years was not really long enough, but they all did fairly well. I think by the time 1990, 1st of April started, most of the borough councils had got prepared and were able to, you know, pick it up and start running with it. But it was a long learning curve for them. I think the schools suffered. I think they still suffer, simply because they don't have that great historical culture of support and tradition of a great education authority with, I say, perhaps the biggest education authority in Europe. And I think to have abolished that was an act of sabotage. It was a desperately sad thing to happen. And I think it set back education in London a long way. This isn't to say it's bad at the moment. There's some good things, some good schools, some good people. There's been various campaigns to help improve education in London. And these days, I think London schools look fairly good. When you look at them on the map, you look at the statistics, many of the schools in London are doing pretty well, but I bet they're not doing as well as they would have done if the old traditions of the London School Board and the Inner London Education Authority had continued.
Come to sort of, you know, sort of the end of so GLC and ILEA ended, talking about passing on knowledge to people who then sort of like taking over the reins of the education system and authority. Let's talk about sort of like legacy, I suppose, of that. And it's 2017, it's quite a few years since then. I suppose, where are you at now with it?
I don't have any close involvement these days. My own kids have grown up and I've got grandchildren in schools, so I'm interested in seeing what's happening, what's going on. I keep my ear to the ground. I have no involvement. I don't wish to be involved closely in it anymore on a political basis. Although I do go to Labour Party meetings and argue for the kind of policies that I still believe are important, and I don't have a problem doing that within the Labour Party. I think the Labour Party stands very much in the same place as it did before, certainly the London Education Authority. I think there have been other changes. The funding of education is now very different. The money goes straight to the schools. And I think that's a pity, because what the ILEA was good at was taking strategic decisions, taking the reference, taking the points that we needed to be focused upon, setting the compass in the right direction, and also doing the big picture. For example, the ILEA and the LCC, probably before that, introduced a comprehensive school system. We abolished grammar schools. That goes back before my time, but we said every school in London should be secondary school. Every secondary school in London should be a comprehensive school. We should see that kids go to their local school and get a good education alongside all the other kids from their area. Yes, we had church schools. I've got views about church schools, which we probably won't go into now, but I'm opposed to church schools. Nevertheless, we had church schools, but we ran them. We provided the funding for them. But across an area, if you were in a neighbourhood, there would probably be a state-run comprehensive school, maybe a church school, who knows. But what we were able to do was make sure that we were going to see that all kids got access to a good, decent education wherever they were. And introducing comprehensive schools was a good example of where ILEA had taken the lead. Most authorities in the country took the same view, and in the end they also abolished grammar schools. There's still a few boroughs, but they make a lot of headlines in the newspapers at the moment because the Prime Minister seems to want to reintroduce grammar schools, which isn't supported by the majority of her own party. But nevertheless, if she wants to go down that road, she'll learn for herself. But by and large, comprehensive schools make sense. You're educating everybody together. The kids that are backward, a bit slow perhaps at one stage, with help and support, they can catch up and make progress. People with difficult social backgrounds, home problems, can get some support in school, and that can compensate them for perhaps problems they've got with their families, with their parents or whatever. So all of that means a good comprehensive school is a community-focused school, and that's brilliant. And I think we should be supporting that policy and those sorts of schools. What we're now seeing, and of course, if ILEA was still around today, it would be having to come to terms with academies and with free schools, both of which I'm totally opposed to. I think local education authorities, whether it's ILEA or whether it's the borough councils or the county councils throughout the land, are best placed to take those strategic decisions, to keep an eye on the schools. They can identify a school that's got problems, they can take action, they can go in, they can put inspectors in, they can help turn schools round. But by and large, the majority of schools perform well, are giving good education and helping kids to get on in a progressive way. We don't need academies, we don't need free schools. It's a desperately sad state of affairs, and I will do all I can to fight to see that academies and free schools are abolished. And if we do have a Labour government, either later this year or at some point in the future, I hope that they'll take that step as well, because we want schools to serve the entire community. And I mean the entire community, not just the brightest, not just the kids from the richest families, but entire communities. And I think that is an overriding policy commitment that the Labour Party sometimes needs to fight a bit harder about, but by and large I think they do a good job.
So I'll ask you about the positive elements of life in London today, and as part of the legacy of the GLC, as you're aware of it, and also from the ILEA.
Well, I believe that what we need are big cities, and I think London is a big city, unfortunately divided into 35 or 36 individual borough councils. I think that's far too many, and I don't think we should be different from New York. New York has 5 boroughs, so you've got a city the size of London, like London in terms of its being a multiracial community. It's the centre of the arts, the theatre, museums, and all the stuff that we'd love going to New York to enjoy. London is the same. New York have got 5 boroughs. Each borough's got, I think, 7 or 8 elected councillors who work on it. London has got 36 borough councils, and it really doesn't make any sense. You've got 36 town halls, 36 chief executives, 36 deputy chief executives, you know, so on and so forth. You've also got, each borough's got perhaps getting on 50 or 60 councillors who are all drawing salaries. They're all elected, great expense every 4 years. We don't need that. We need London to be one big city. Each of our boroughs are tiny. There are no boroughs outside of London as small as the London boroughs. They really are too small, in my view. I think what GLC demonstrated is that regional councils are best. And as we move into, you know, more modern times with social media, with internet access and so on and so forth, what I think we're available, what we see is a need to abolish the borough councils that we've got at the moment, bring them together, whether we put them into one big council like the GLC, or whether we create 5 or 6 borough councils, perhaps 2 or 3 north of the river, 2 or 3 south of the river, perhaps 1 for the central part of London, the Inner London Authority. I don't know, that is for a decision to be made, but I would welcome a decision that did one of those, came to one of those conclusions, and you then start to see services grouped and delivered effectively. We're talking about, you're asking about the GLC and its success story, what it was good at, what the LCC before it was good at, I think. But it's brilliant at transport. I think London Transport, we all complain about it. I'm sure you and I will have complained about it today at least once, if not more often. But actually, London Transport is superb. The congestion charge was brought in by Ken Livingstone, perfectly sensible thing. It makes London, at least you drive through it slowly, I know, but at least you can get through it. Some capital cities you can't drive through because they're just clogged solid with people parking. So I think what we've got are public transport, a superb fire service, ambulance service. Sorry, I don't think the ambulance service is local councils. But yes, and lots of other services that are provided and could be provided much better on a London-wide basis. Housing, perhaps, social housing, housing for the homeless, all those kind of issues which the GLC used to do, ILIA used to help. And I think if we were able to go back to a situation, or to invent for the future a situation where we had one authority dealing with all the homeless people in London, dealing with transport, dealing with all the other services, liaising with the health service, which the GLC can do for the whole of London, or the GLC could do, and a London-wide government today would be able to do the same again in the future. 36 borough councils can't relate to the National Health Service. It's not possible, and we see some of those problems today. So I'm conscious that regional government is coming back, not in London yet, although we do have a mayor, and we could see more powers going to the mayor. I'd like to see that happening, but it's true in Birmingham, in Manchester, in Merseyside, up in Tyneside, Leeds, Bradford, and then Sheffield and city areas around that, as well as some of the big counties. They work well. They're effective. They deliver services well. They're relatively cost-effective. They don't waste money. They look after their services well. They employ expert people and all of that. I'd love to see much more of that. Whether it'll happen, I don't know. But it would be fantastic, I think, if one of the legacies of the GLC and ILIA was the rediscovery that big authorities can really, you know, kick hell out of the private sector organisations and can deliver services that real people want and need and can rely on.
Lots of people don't know about the GLC or even the ILEA. Why do you think it's been forgotten?
I guess The London population does turn over at a great speed. Lots of people come here. If they come from abroad, they live here, and then they move on somewhere else. They move out of London. So the verbal tradition, the passing on of, you know, the history of London and its tradition, its record, the GLC, the ILEA, I think there are not that many people. I think there are not that many people, perhaps, who have got families that have grown up. My family was born, my kids were born in London, they've grown up, they still live in London. But I think there's fewer and fewer of people like that. They can remember the ILEA, they can remember the GLC, and they can remember what good things used to happen. Used to be youth services, there used to be adult education that was provided across London on a phenomenally large scale. Hardly any adult education exists any longer in London, which I think is tragic. I mean, free-ish, almost free. You know, you're paying £5 or something to join a class, and you could then study another language. You could become fluent in English if you come from abroad. You could study art, music. You could go and start preparing to go to university. You can get your O's and A levels and things like that. So I think what's happening at the moment is that there is a real struggle to make sense. I've forgotten the question you asked me.
Asking about, I suppose, the erasure or the fact that young people don't know.
Yeah, the history. Yes, that's right. I'm sorry. Yes, you were asking me about the tradition, passing it on. I think it is the case that London is a vibrant, lively, young city. People come here, they grow up, and then they move on. Very large extent. At the moment, we're seeing people coming from abroad, living for a few years, perhaps wealthy people, working in the media, working in finance, working in the City of London. I have no problems about that. But I think a lot of young people from working class backgrounds are being forced out. The housing isn't there any longer. The GLC used to be a housing authority across London, used to be responsible as a landlord for hundreds of thousands of tenants. And I think that was an enormous and valuable service to the people of London. Of course, the government at the moment is abolishing council housing. It wants housing to be put out, wants it to be cost effective, wants rents to go up, wants people to pay more. And if you can't pay more, you just have to move on. So I think what the legacy of the GLC really is the consequence of a Conservative government that has just gone out of its way to destroy public services, to destroy councils, to take their powers away, to give them less money. Funding by local councils at the moment is 50% of what it was when Labour was in office in 2010. And you can't take any organisation and take away 50% of its funding and expect it to carry on. It just can't. It can struggle, it'll do its best, but it can't deliver the same service and the same quality once you've taken 50% of its funding and 50% of its staff away. And I'm afraid that's what's happened. And one of the legacies of the GLC and the ILEA is that at least there are people around who can remember how good that was, how important that was, and how cost effective it was, and services that were provided for Londoners are still there. They could be revived. If we had a Labour government that was prepared to start spending on the same scale again and restore power to local government, restore power to the education service and abolish free schools and academies, I'd be a very happy man. But I think we'd be looking at a lot of very happy Londoners too.
Cool. So, we've come to the end of our time. How's it been?
I've enjoyed talking about it. I hope I've not been too dull or boring. But it's been fascinating just to have an opportunity to reflect on all those great experiences that I had and enjoyed, and I think London has benefited from as well. And I was happy to have been the leader of the Inner London Education Authority for 3 years and involved with it for 11.
Thank you so much for speaking.
It's a pleasure.